Oh, yes, it could, and in fact it is. The heat is on back east for sure, I'm hearing. It's hot and humid. Just the usual nice weather here on the West Coast, but it's actually very hot up in the Northwest. Seattle and Portland are seeing temperatures in the 80s today. That's pretty unusual. They get so much rain and gray skies, at least in Seattle. They're probably happy for the heat, but those of us who know that it's probably not natural to have some of this extreme heat in some of these places this time of year, yes, it is the middle of summer, I know that, but it's still hotter than average, are concerned about what this portends for our children, our grandchildren, future generations, not to mention ourselves, sweltering it out. Welcoming to the program now, Valerie Sorrells, if I've pronounced your name correctly, Valerie. Great to have you on. You are the associate director of one of my favorite groups, Kids Versus Global Warming and the I Matter campaign.
Thanks for having me.
We've had Alex Lors, the founder of the I Matter March and Kids Versus Global Warming. Several times. I met Alex, I believe, at one of the Al Gore trainings years ago. Have been watching his progress and cheering him on and really seeing him mature into a very tall and articulate young man. Has always been passionate. I think he went off to college for a while. Is that correct?
He did, in British Columbia. So he's back home in Ventura, California for the summer and then heading back to British Columbia in the fall.
So is he taking a break from the campaign, or they're part-time, or what's his status?
Very part-time. He's more of an advisor capacity, and we're moving forward with building the I Matter Youth Council, giving other opportunity to youth who also want to do stand up for their future and do things like Alec has done, to speak and plan actions in their communities and file lawsuits in their states and meet with their congresspeople.
And good on them. And it's not okay just to dump this crisis onto them, of course. As I often say on this program, we baby boomers, some of us who are grandparents already, need to do our part, right, to start solving the problem before we turn things over.
That's right. I think it takes all of us. It is definitely an intergenerational effort. And that's why we were really excited to hear about this upcoming walk for our grandchildren.
Tell us about it.
Well, we were contacted a month or 2 months ago by a group of grandparents in North Carolina who had been at a Bill McKibben rally. I think it was a Do the Math, part of the Do the Math tour. And they felt called to really put something together and stand up as grandparents to take action to protect the future for their children and grandchildren. And so their initial idea was to have an intergenerational walk, a 100-mile walk from Camp David, Maryland to Washington, D.C., and ending at the White House gates with a big rally. So that was their vision, and they contacted us to get youth and children involved, and also reached out to CCAN and 350 and some other organizations who are also have also been involved in planning and organizing these two events, which actually has turned into three events because there will also be a civil disobedience act on July 26th in D.C.
And we are trying to get hold of one of those grandparents now that you referred us to. If not, then we will, next week, either right before the rally or perhaps afterwards. I think this is a very compelling constituency, grandparents, because they can see that, time goes quickly, life goes fast, even when you're lucky enough to live a long, healthy life, as these grandparents have been fortunate to do. And they see, the passing of the torch to not only their own now-grown children, but their grandchildren. So it's probably very real, very visceral for them. It's not a far-off, distant possibility that their loved ones, their grandchildren, could be harmed by, worsening climate change.
Absolutely. And I think there's a sense of responsibility on the part of a lot of the older generation or the younger generation to pass along a planet and communities that are viable and sustainable. And I think our children and our grandchildren will look us in the eye someday and ask what we did to protect their future. So I think this is a really powerful coalition of all the different generations that are reacting to climate change and taking action on climate change in different ways. And there's a lot that we can do together to, you know, further empower all of our constituencies in our own communities to get involved and take action together.
Do you think word is spreading quickly enough, perhaps not fast enough, but do you see change in perhaps your own community and just public awareness about the climate crisis as the weather gets more extreme?
Yeah, I think I'm fortunate to live in a community with a lot of progressive constituencies because there are a couple of universities here and a strong progressive Mennonite presence. And the Center for Justice and Peace Building is also located here in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And there's quite a bit of awareness about climate change and the problems of corporate structure and how insidious the problem is. And there's quite a few events going on in our communities anyway that focus on what we can do as a community, what we can do at state levels. And a part of our plan, our vision as I Matter, is to have young people in their communities, you know, raising awareness and bringing folks together to come up with solutions to their own issues that they face, as well as bringing action to their state and federal level.
And you have, what, five of your own children, Valerie?
I do. My youngest are twins, and they're 17. So they're almost all grown, and I will actually be a grandparent by the end of July.
Wow. Well, good for you. And I'm a step-grandma, so I have a granddaughter who calls me Green Ma since I'm grandma number three. Just
great.
For something different. I don't really like being a step anything. Having had a not-so-nice stepmother myself, but I won't go there. Let's talk about, you know, having five children and how that feels and about to become a grandmother in terms of just what we're, you know, laying on the next generations. And it's a heavy thing. You know, we had enough of a difficult time, you know, growing up and trying to figure out ourselves. But, you know, stepping into a world that is already compromised, you know, really our basic natural systems under attack, really because of our generation, because our grandparents didn't know about this. It's tough. How do you talk to your children about the climate crisis?
It really is tough. You know, this is really the first generation that has had to actually grapple with the daunting task and looming catastrophe of, you know, potentially, sparkly, the end of civilization as we know it. So it's a lot of pressure and a lot of, it's understandable how much denial there still is just because the problem can seem so daunting and so undoable. And so I think, information and also just empowering people to understand that there are things that we can do about it. It's not a hopeless cause at this point. And I think the more people get involved to actually do something, the less emotionally depressed or emotionally taxed we will be. Because it really is, to me, it feels like a very heavy responsibility and a heavy issue.
And when one does take an action, you know, however small, at least that's hopefully a start of more actions, you do feel like you're, you know, becoming part of the solution. And it's hard to imagine anyone not really being aware of the problem. I mean, just our multiple environmental problems and what we're up against, but climate change, of course, being the great exacerbator for what's going
Absolutely.
On with our oceans, with our food system, with our agriculture. I mean, there's just so many stories every day, if one is tuned into this stuff, about how, you know, food prices are up and there's water shortages and all that is getting worse. And there's a lot we can do from, you know, what we drive, what we eat, how we build, who we vote for. How important is that?
Right.
We have one of the grandfathers joining us now, Richard Fireman.
Right. Hello.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for joining us in progress. We were just talking about, I just asked Valerie a question, so I'll let her answer and then I'll go on and bring you into the conversation. Go ahead, Valerie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Okay. Yeah, I was just talking about, you know, all the impacts we see everywhere, you know, and just how it's being brought home, you know, the price of food and shortages, and we just see that everywhere. So it's hard to imagine people not being aware of this,
right.
You know, growing crisis. And Richard, I guess you can weigh in now, too.
I am just coming in on the conversation, so... Can you update me on the exact question?
Yes. What I really like to hear from you is how you got involved in this planned march for our grandchildren. I imagine you're a grandfather. And how did you come to be so concerned about climate change that you're going to be out in the heat walking to Washington, I believe?
Yes. Well, this is nothing new for me. I'm a retired medical doctor, and I read Bill McKibben's book, The End of Nature, in 1989, and I never recovered from that. To understand the depth of the human influence on all biological and all physical systems on Earth was earth-shattering for me. We have become what many people now call a geological force. So we are altering the chemistry, the basic chemistry of all Earth systems, from the climate, from the nitrogen cycle, from the circulations of the oceans, and we're doing this in a way that is as fast or faster than has ever happened, just due to geological forces like tectonic plate movements and volcanic eruptions and this huge asteroid that hit the Earth 65 million years ago. We have started the sixth mass extinction on Earth. So in 1989, within 3 years, I was basically out of medicine working on environmental issues. This is a crisis that is beyond our ability to deal with, because we don't understand the magnitude of it. I don't think biologically we're equipped to deal with such long-term effects, but we have to begin to deal with them because they're happening so fast, faster than the scientists predicted 20 years ago, faster than they predicted 10 years ago, faster than they predicted 5 years ago. So I love my grandchildren. I love all children. I love all the creatures on the earth, and there's nothing else for me to do but participate in this walk. And the outcome is to have the president do one thing that he can do alone, which is to reject the Keystone Pipeline. That's the major thing that he can do in the next 3 months that will send a clear message to the rest of the world that this country means business, is going to relook at its climate policy.
Do you have any sense of what the president is going to do, since he can act alone without the Congress's approval or lack thereof?
Well, we don't know what the president is going to do. There are a couple things that he could do, one of which we will think is a huge mistake because it will allow Keystone. The other thing he could do would be to send it back to the State Department for a new environmental impact analysis, because the one that was commissioned before and the State Department completed was flawed. It was actually done by the fossil fuel industry. Or he could just reject it and say that that destroying the forests and water systems of Alberta for foreign nationals' profits is not in our national interest. It will add significantly to global climate change, and it will destroy a way of life that people have been living on these lands for thousands and maybe 10,000s of years in Canada. So we need to draw a line in the sand and say no to Keystone, and we need to say no to his all-of-the-above energy policy. And we're trying to build a movement, and the beautiful thing about this walk is it's intergenerational. We're working with iMatter, and these kids are amazing. We're working with Climate Parents, a new group out of California that is getting parents engaged with their kids. And so we are trying to hold the president to his promise to do something on climate to protect the children and the grandchildren.
Mark Kurtzgaard and Lisa Hoya started that group right here in San Francisco. So what do you think, Richard, of the president's speech on climate change? Were you impressed?
I was totally disappointed.
Really?
Yes. The president has the authority to do the things that he said he was going to do, and he's had that authority for years, and he should have moved much sooner on the carbon rule. I hope that he moves quickly, and I hope the rule is solid. The rhetoric around Keystone he left wide open. When you say national security and our national interest, that's a big hole to drive three or four Keystone pipelines through. So I think that the president left a lot to be desired in this speech. I think the all-of-above energy policy is a way to avoid making the tough decisions. We as a people need to be making tough decisions on how we are obtaining our energy. We are destroying the water all over our country by fracking, and he's relying on natural gas for our energy policy. And it's just destroying groundwater. Recent reports
said that, too, by the way.
Pardon me?
Fracking is causing earthquakes as well.
Yes, and fracking is causing earthquakes. So the all-of-above energy policy, for me, is no policy at all. So, you know, what we hope to do in this walk and in the rally is to speak to the president's heart. The president has kids. These kids have a high likelihood of surviving through the 21st century. And the language of all the science is really interesting, because the science says that it's very highly likely that we are going to be entering a new geological age, moving from the Holocene, from the Anthropocene, which is our age, the Holocene, which was the age of high civilization, into the Anthropocene, which is the age that scientists are now saying we are entering or have entered, that human beings are now a geological force. And if we look back in hindsight at these kids, if his two children look back in hindsight and say, my dad missed this one opportunity that we have, and we have this small window of opportunity to change our energy policy, it would be more than a shame. It would be catastrophic for all life on Earth, not just human life, but for all life on human Earth. So the language of the science means it's highly likely that we are not going to make it safely through this climate temperature increase, and lots of species are going to die, and maybe human civilization is going to take a huge, huge hit. The highly likely language means that it's 97% sure. So as me as a grandparent and a parent, and you as a parent and a grandparent, would you put your child in a car, in a boat, on a plane, on a train, to borrow from Dr. Seuss, if it was highly likely that you wouldn't survive safely? And that's what the science is telling us. It's highly likely that we're not going to survive safely if we continue on this fossil fuel path. So we hope that we're going to appeal to the president's heart and not to the political reality that he faces, because he's going to take a lot of political hits for denying Keystone and for changing his fossil fuel policy.
We just have a couple minutes left, but I would imagine you have very little patience for the industrial denial machine.
to say the least.
I mean, you know, as if we don't have enough challenges just coming up with solutions to be slowed down by, you know, the money-backed fossil fuel industry denial campaign, but, you know, just people who would love to think there's any doubt so they can go back to business as usual. slowing us down. That's what really gets me crazy. It's like we just don't have time for this, people. Grow up or get out of the way.
Yes. Yes. And the shame about it is that if we build Keystone and we continue knocking, destroying mountains for fossil fuel, for the coal in the Appalachian Mountains and destroying the plain states, and destroying aquifers with fracking, we are missing a wonderful opportunity to create a new economy.
Mm-hmm.
People
well
are
said.
Suffering in this economy, and to get the people engaged in meaningful work. By meaningful work, I mean work that makes a difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. We're out of time. Richard Fireman, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your comments. Valerie Searles, thanks for joining us, and thanks for bringing onto the show.
Thank you.
Short notice. Really appreciate it. We'll follow up with you after the march. Good luck with that.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That does it for this edition of The Green Front. If you joined us in progress, check out the archives at trn.fm or thegreenfront.com. Have a great green one. I'm Kate Gould.